have a habit sometimes in my life of really kind of being annoying with some things. And one of the things that I just have a tendency to do, I don't know why I do this, but I'll go through like periods where I ask like the same question, even to the same people, repeatedly. And a few years ago, that question that I had would be, if you had one wish, what would it be? And I can't tell you how many times I asked Kathy that question. If you had one wish, what would that wish be? What would you ask to be granted? And why I asked so many times, why I asked Kathy so many times, I don't know. But every single time I would ask Kathy that question, she would give me the same exact answer. While I was consistent with my question, she was consistent with her answer. She would always say, world peace. Never once did she ask for more money. Never once did she ask for a new car or a new house, for a new wardrobe, a new purse. It was always that she wanted world peace. I mean, and when you really think about it, can you blame her? I mean, just in our lifetime, as in like mine and Kathy's lifetime, we've witnessed two major wars in the Middle East. We've witnessed the World Trade Center being attempted to be blown up and then later taken out by two airplanes. We've seen countless school shootings, not to mention the threats that we even see currently with ISIS and other extreme terrorist groups. And I don't know about you, but it seems like there is a ton of tension everywhere. And as we look at what's going on in the world, things like ISIS, things like even, hey, next year it's time for another presidential election. Not to mention the personal things going in our lives. I mean, our family in just the last couple years, it seems, has been bombarded with health issues. Not just me and Kathy, but, you know, our parents, our aunts and uncles, grandparents have just had major health issues. And all of those personal things added on to what's going on in our world, it just leads to stress and to personal tension. And I think in all of this, we could just use a little peace. We could use a time of refreshing. We need time to rest in certainty of our future. But the thing is, oftentimes, the way that we search out peace, the way that we find peace, comes through a fight. I mean, think about it. After the Japanese bombarded Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941, FDR and the Senate voted unanimously to declare war on Japan. And in the House of Representatives, there was only one dissenting vote. And for the next 4 years, the world was caught in a major battle. One that had actually started years before and would eventually end after we dropped two nuclear bombs on Japan. The way to peace was through fighting. And I want to be clear, I don't think that war is never the option. I think that sometimes that is what we are called to, but oftentimes our first response to find peace is through fighting. I mean, and think about it, we even do that in our own lives. You know, someone hurts us, and what's our immediate gut reaction? What do we want to do? That's to hurt them back. We think if we retaliate in some sort of way, that we will even the score. It will bring balance to the system, and everything will be in equilibrium once again, and it restores peace in the universe if we can just punch them in the face. And the truth is, it may eventually bring about peace. But oftentimes, after there's many casualties, hurt friendships, broken trusts, and many, many, many tears. But what if, when it came to our lives, God provided a plan for peace? a way for peace that didn't involve the casualties that we often find when we choose retaliation as a method to gain that peace? What if there really was a more peaceful way to bring peace? I mean, sounds like something that would be worthy of the Nobel Peace Prize, right? And I want to preface this by saying that I do believe that there is a time where we have to stand up, where we have to fight, where even war may be necessary. But if that isn't the case, you know, if that wasn't the case, I don't believe that God would have sent the Israelites into the land of Canaan the way that he did. However, I think all too often in our personal lives, we let our own personal feelings and emotions, our raw gut instincts to take over, and we lose sight of what in that situation may really bring peace to begin with. That's the account I want to look at today. To examine a time where people had expectations due to their raw emotions and feelings, and it had clouded a solution that was right before their eyes their entire time. The account of Jesus coming into Jerusalem is an event that is so special that it is actually recorded in all four Gospels. Very few accounts can be found in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, but the triumphal entry is one of them. For nearly 100 years, Jerusalem had been under Roman rule, and Rome was just the last of many nations who had ruled over Israel. I mean, and when Herod had heard that there was another king's birth, Herod had ordered the massacre of all the Jewish baby boys. He'd been responsible for placing foreign idols inside the temple. And the Jews had long awaited the Messiah, their king, to end this oppression, declare their freedom as a nation once again. And then walks Jesus into the scene. I mean, a man who has done some pretty remarkable things. He's turned water into wine. He's made a meal for thousands out of 5 small loaves of bread and 2 fish. He's healed a blind man. He's healed a lame man. He's brought people back from the dead. He's driven out demons from people. I mean, Jesus was a miracle worker. And while all of these are amazing feats in and of themselves, all of those feats actually point to Jesus. And who Jesus is. That Jesus' miracles were there to point the way to God. That Jesus was from God. That Jesus was God in the flesh. Now, I don't know about you, but there have been a guy walking around Rockford or Northern Illinois region doing the types of things that Jesus was doing. I want to go check him out. I mean, I would want to see if there was legitimacy to what he was doing. I mean, you may even catch me following him around. And that's exactly what people were doing. They had been hearing of all these amazing things that Jesus had been doing, and they started following him. I mean, there had been several people before Jesus who'd claimed to be the Messiah, the Anointed One. However, all of them came and went without any change. I mean, they were still under Roman rule. The Jews were still being oppressed. They had no freedom. They had no peace. But something was different about Jesus. I mean, while he made indirect claims about being God or the Messiah, he wasn't as bold about it as those who had come before him. Jesus mainly let others reach the conclusion on their own. And then let them spread the word about who he really was. He let his actions, his miracles, his teachings point the way to reveal that he was the one who was promised by the prophets hundreds and even thousands of years before. The account we're going to look at today, it's time for Jesus to fulfill his duties. To be the sacrifice that would reestablish mankind's relationship with God for all eternity. Earlier, Dave read the account out of Matthew, but I want to share with you out of Luke chapter 19 this morning, this account. Luke 19, starting in verse 28, he writes this. After Jesus had said this, he went on ahead, going up to Jerusalem. As he approached Bethpage and Bethany at the hill called the Mount of Olives, he sent two of his disciples, saying to them, "Go to the village ahead of you, and as you enter it, you'll find a colt tied there, which no one has ever ridden. Untie it and bring it here. If anyone asks you, 'Why are you untying it?' tell him, 'The Lord needs it.' Those who were sent ahead went and found it just as he told them. As they were untying the colt, its owners asked them, 'Why are you untying the colt?' And they replied, 'The Lord needs it.' They brought it to Jesus, threw their cloaks on the colt, and put Jesus on it. And as he went along, people spread their cloaks on the road. When he came near the place where the road goes down the Mount of Olives, the whole crowd of disciples began joyfully to praise God in loud voices for all the miracles they had seen. 'Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord. Peace in heaven and glory in the highest.' Some of the Pharisees in the crowd said to Jesus, 'Teacher, rebuke your disciples.' 'I tell you,' he replied, 'if they keep quiet, the stones will cry out.' As he approached Jerusalem and saw the city, he wept over it and said, 'If you, even you, had only known on this day what would bring you peace. But now it's hidden from your eyes. The days will come upon you when your enemies will build an embankment against you and encircle you and hem you in on every side. They will dash you to the ground, you and the children within your walls. They will not leave one stone on another because you did not recognize the time of God's coming to you." It's time for Jesus to come in to Jerusalem. Jesus takes a colt to ride into the city. And I imagine this happening a lot like, you know, in action shows or TV movies. You know, Jack Bauer is chasing someone down and he needs a vehicle, so he just opens up the door, throws the guy out, and says, "Hey, I need this." And what's crazy is this was actually something along those lines, maybe not quite that dramatic, was custom in this time. You know, a dignitary could essentially borrow or use someone else's property for personal reasons. And this custom was even extended to rabbis. So Jesus, using this man's donkey, was not actually an unusual request. But then something amazing does happen. As Jesus gets closer to Jerusalem, people start praising him as king. The people are bypassing what the religious leaders of the day were saying, and they were proclaiming Christ as king. And the religious leaders even try to stop this from happening. And while the text doesn't mention this, I kind of imagine at first as the people are starting to do this, you know, the Pharisees, the teachers of the law, they're like, "Hey, stop it! Calm down." "No, he's not." And they can't control the crowd. And so eventually they come up to Jesus and they say, "Jesus, tell him to stop." And Jesus says, "Sorry. This proclamation of me as king, it's going to happen. Whether it's this crowd that is doing it, or it's that big boulder over there, the time has come for people to see me as king." Then, as Jesus makes his final approach to the city, this proclaimed king, he begins to weep. You see, because while Jesus, he knows that the people are seeing him as king now, he knows that in a few short days, they'll be demanding this newly proclaimed king to be executed. The way of peace that he was bringing them would soon be forgotten, and the majority of them would once again establish the idea of a king who was going to forcefully overthrow the Roman government. That the way to peace was through their own might, was through their own military campaign, rather than the sacrifice that he was about to undergo. And since the people were going to revert back to this way of peace, Jesus foresees what will happen to them. Total destruction. And you know, a few decades later, Titus of Rome does exactly this. He comes into Jerusalem and completely destroys it. The way to peace was not through a huge military campaign. It was not through the Jews' own might. The way to peace was through the recognition and the surrender to the king. You see, the religious leaders didn't even see Jesus as the king. And while the people might have seen Jesus as king for a short while, most of them never really surrendered to the king. And at least to begin with, it was only a few of Jesus' faithful followers who truly served the king. But this was the way to peace. To see the king, to surrender to the king, and to serve the king. And the same is true for us today. You want peace in your life? You want peace from all the junk that is going on in the world around you? You want peace from all the junk that is going on in your life, the things that you are dealing with? You need to see the king, you need to surrender to the king, and you need to serve the king. You know, with all the extra biblical evidence that exists today, it is pretty hard to deny that Jesus of Nazareth was a real man who existed around 2,000 years ago. Although there are still many places in the world in order to keep people from following him, they teach that he was a fairy tale. That he was a myth, that he was a legend, despite all of the evidence outside of the Bible that truly exists, that shows at the very least that Jesus was a real person. But while people, for the most part, do not deny his existence, they still don't see him for who he really is. They don't recognize Jesus as king. Oh yeah, maybe Jesus was a great teacher. Maybe Jesus was really one of the first women's rights activists. Or maybe to some of them, Jesus is a cult leader. But what I find even more sad is that oftentimes Christians don't even truly recognize Jesus as king. Yeah, they might see Jesus as Redeemer. They might see Jesus as Savior. They might see Jesus as Friend. And while he is all of those things, he is also the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. You know, in our American heritage, this is a hard thing for us to grasp. Because we live in a governmental system that is opposed to complete control. We live in a system based upon checks and balances. We are a country that values our freedom. And if we truly want to recognize that we have a king, guess what that means? We are giving up our freedom and we are subject to somebody else. You know, in our culture, we see this as a bad thing because we look throughout world history and we see that when people have complete control, there's a tendency for abuse that occurs. But that is where Christ is different. Because Christ is a king who sympathizes with us. He is a king who cares about us. He is a king who wants what is best for us. He is a king who values us and who is a perfect king, who's not looking out to gain more power or control, because the reality of it is he already has complete power and control. And he is a king that values us so much that he actually lets us choose whether we want to be a part of his kingdom or not. And if we don't want to be a servant of the king, we reserve the right to be a part of another kingdom, to be a part of the kingdom of this world, a kingdom that will perish and fade, a kingdom that is destined for an eternal separation from him. He's a king that values us so much that he lets us choose, what kingdom do you want to be a part of? But if you want peace that comes from the Prince of Peace, from the King of Kings, from the Lord of Lords, we must first see and truly recognize Jesus, not just as Redeemer, not just as Savior, not just as Friend, but as King. And it's not just enough for us to recognize him as King. You know, many that day, as Jesus entered into Jerusalem, saw that. They saw him as king. They recognized that. And less than a week later, they were turning their back on him and shouting, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" Jesus has many blessings he wants to give us. Jesus wants to give us the best life that is worth living. But in order for that to happen, this means that we need to be subject to his laws, his rules. He's given those to us to live the best life. You know, Jesus reminds us that we can't serve two masters. You know, that we have to serve one and give up the other. We want the peace that comes from Jesus. We need to completely surrender to him. Alcohol have control of your life? You need to surrender it to the king. Your job have control of your life? You need to surrender it to the king. You have a grudge against someone that is holding you captive? You need to surrender it to the king. When we serve the king, we've got to surrender everything to him. To be dependent on him. We have to learn to trust him with our everything. And again, this is a difficult struggle to us because our culture teaches us you need to be self-sufficient. You need to be self-sustaining. You need to be self-fulfilled. But I want you to think about it. If God can part a sea, if he can bring the dead to life, if he can cause city walls to crumble after a few laps around the city and some trumpet blasts, he can take care of your addiction. He can take care of your sickness. He can take care of your anxiety. Remember that Jesus promises us that if we surrender it to him, he'll give us rest. He'll give us peace. You worn out? You tired? Feel a burden on you? Jesus promises this. He says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I'm gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light." Give it to Jesus. Give it to the King. He wants to care for you. wants to take care of you. But before He can give you rest, before He can give you peace, you've got to surrender to the King. Surrender it to Him. Surrender yourself to Him. Say, you know what? I've been trying to do this on my own for so long. I've been trying to do it with my might. But You're King. And I'm Your servant. And while slavery in our culture and in our world is a tragedy, and there were many, many abuses, extreme abuses that would happen, again, remember, we have a perfect master. A master who's not out there to try to get a bigger profit and is looking for cheap labor. We have a master who deeply loves His servants. Loves His servants so much, He calls them His children. But you know, a king not only has laws for his subjects, for his servants, there are tasks that need to be completed for the kingdom. And the king has servants who are willing to do what he asks. That when the king says jump, his servants say, yes, master, how high? When he says run, his servants say, yes, master, how far? When he says give to those in need, his servants say, yes, master, how much? And when he says go into all the world and tell other people about my kingdom, his servants say, here I am, Lord, send me. Where specifically would you like me to go, my master? You see, the king has plans for his servants. He has places he wants them to serve. And this can be different for different people. But he calls for all of his servants, all of his subjects to serve. Maybe this means holding babies or teaching toddlers in a classroom. Maybe this means going out and feeding the homeless in the streets of Rockford. Maybe this meaning that we have a horrible epidemic of pregnant teenagers in our culture, and these are girls who need to be cared upon and loved upon and to be taught how to properly raise their children and need someone to show them that love so that maybe their children don't grow up to make the same mistakes they have. Maybe that means volunteering to help others overcome their addictions. Maybe that means cleaning up the dog poop that's been piling up all winter in your 90-year-old neighbor's backyard from her teacup Yorkie. Whatever it is, God has called His subjects to serve. And when we start to serve in the kingdom, we start to realize that we are actually a part of something that is much, much bigger than ourselves. And when we realize that we are part of something that is much, much bigger, our worries, our concerns, our cares start to become less and less about ourselves. And we start to care more about the things that God cares about. And we start to look outside of ourselves, outside of our issues, outside of our struggles, we start to look less and less big, and we start to find peace in our lives. When we start to see how God is working. How He didn't just work in the Bible, that God is working today. that He is living and active, and that He is working in and through us for His kingdom. And when we start to recognize the kingdom work that is going on, we start to find peace. Because we recognize that to find peace is not through some military campaign to overthrow and make Christianity the law of the land. To sacrifice hundreds of thousands of lives to bring that about. No, we realize that to find peace, the sacrifice has already occurred through one man, through our King. Jesus, that day as He entered into Jerusalem, He realized that the people there were blinded. They didn't realize what was going to bring them peace, that it was through Him, their King, that they would find peace, that it was going to come back to, they were going to rely on themselves, rather than this one that they were proclaiming King at the time. And so where are you on this journey? Have you maybe in the past, you've seen Jesus as Redeemer, as Savior, as Friend, but you've never really stopped to think, you know what, Jesus is more than that. Jesus is King. Maybe you've seen that and you were kind of like the people that day and you recognized it, but you didn't really surrender to Him. You almost kind of lived as a servant in rebellion. You haven't recognized that His laws are really in your best interest. And that if you're really going to call Him Lord, if you're going to come in to church on Sunday morning and say, Lord, I lift Your name on high, then maybe you need to really recognize Him as Lord and to start living as if He is your Lord, as if He is your King, as if He is your Master, and stop living under your own rules and guidelines and living subject to Him. And maybe you've done that. Maybe you've surrendered to Him, that you follow Him. And you're kind of like the rich young ruler. Says, God, I have followed Your laws. I live for Him. I know Him inside and out, and I live for Him. And Jesus says, all right, so what I want you to do is I want you to serve Me. I want you to sell all that you have and give it to the poor. And he went away sad because he realized, I'm not ready to serve. I might be a subject, but am I really a servant? And maybe you need to ask yourself, where is God calling me to serve? Where do I need to be to serve Him? We're going to offer a time of invitation. A time for you to say, you know what? I do. I need to recognize, I need to see Jesus as King, or I need to be subject to Him because I have been living to myself. I've been trying to conquer my struggles on my own, and I really need to give myself wholeheartedly to Him, to surrender to the King. Or maybe you're at a point that you're saying, you know what? You're right. I've been obeying the law, but I just haven't been serving. I need to find a place to get connected, to get involved in kingdom work. I want to encourage you that as we get ready to stand and sing the song, we're going to be singing a song called Crown Him. You know, Majesty. And I actually want to encourage you, as we stand and sing this song, if you aren't ready to actually crown Jesus as your King, keep your mouth quiet. And pray about that. Do I need to be subject to the King, or do I still want to live my own life? If you have a decision on your heart, we want to encourage you to come forward. We would love to talk with you, pray with you about that decision, and to make that commitment, to make Jesus Christ King of your life.